Good morning to everyone. We will begin this morning with introductions from the court. My name is Mike Hedekin and I am the Chief Justice. And now, normally we do this by order of seniority as to service on the court, but we have a guest judge with us today from Douglas County. So she will introduce herself first.
Thank you. And good morning. I'm Leanne Serb. I'm a district court judge with the 4th Judicial District of Douglas County.
William Castle, good morning.
Stephanie Stacy, good morning.
Good morning. I am Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
And John Friedenberg.
Thank you, members of the court. Our first case today is Adams Land and Cattle versus Widdowson. And is it Mr. Jefferson? Very good. Good morning to you and other counsel, Mr. Scaglione. You're here today. Good morning to you. Do any counsel have any questions before we begin? Then, Mr. Jefferson, you may approach and you may proceed.
If I may, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
You may.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Joshua Deathliston. I'm from the Nebraska Attorney General's Office, here with co-counsel Justin Levine. We are appearing on behalf of the appellant representatives of the Nebraska Brain Committee. This case presents a question of statutory interpretation. The district court erred in interpreting Nebraska Revised Statute 54-1122 in a manner that would significantly damage the Brand Act, contrary to the text of that provision and its place within the Act. This is not a case about how Appley alone was administered, but rather threatens to establish a general rule for all registered feedlots that would remove critical inspection requirements before cattle are slaughtered. Although this matter has been fully briefed, I'd like to highlight 3 points. First, the district court's order is contrary to the structure and purpose of the Brand Act and threatens the integrity of that act. Second, Nebraska Revised Statute 54-1122 is clear that inspections are required for cattle when they arrive at a registered feedlot unless they come directly from the point of origin. And third, the Brand Committee has consistently applied this interpretation to every registered feedlot in the state except the appellee. So turning to my first point, this case is about 54-1122 and the Brand Committee's interpretation of that statute that requires an inspection for cattle arriving at a registered feedlot if they don't come directly from origin is the only interpretation that is consistent with the structure and purpose of the Brand Act.
At one point in time, did your board interpret this differently?
Your Honor, in 2009, they did pass a vote to allow Adams to administer their cattle differently. The evidence shows that this was not an actual interpretation of the statute that was meant to be broadly applied, and that's for a number of reasons. One, the meeting minutes from 2009, particularly the December meeting minutes, where Mr. Stonick, the former executive director, gave an update to the committee, was clear that it was for Adams Land and Cattle and discussed in that context. In addition, Mr. Horton, who was a former longtime staff member and former interim executive director, indicated in his deposition, which is at Exhibit 31, that it was implied to the staff at that time that this was for Adams Land and Cattle. In addition, there was no change to the rules and regulations. There was no change to any forms or any other committee documents in this regard.
So how would you characterize what happened in 2009? Is this the Brand Committee deciding to give someone an exemption from the statute, or how would you characterize it in that way or some other way?
Your Honor, I think we sort of have to take it for how the evidence portrays it, which is basically just that. It was the evidence from Mr. Stonick was that this was raised by Adams for their cost and convenience, was raised to the level of committee, was passed for them, resulted in an addendum to their registered feedlot agreement that no other registered feedlot in the state had. And as I mentioned, this was not held out as part of the registered feedlot program going forward.
So under the addendum, would there ever be a brand inspection, a physical inspection?
So the way the evidence portrayed the cattle moving for Adams Land and Cattle is they significantly use these background lots, which is the intermediate point between the point of origin and the registered feedlot. Under that addendum, as long as they're bringing them through the background lot and then to the registered feedlot, then those cattle would not be inspected.
Are they inspected before they go to the background lot?
So if they bring them from the point of origin, they would typically be inspected at that point. But the problem is when you sort of break that chain between that point of verification and the registered feedlot, there's an opportunity for intermingling with other cattle. And I'm sure Appalee will tell you that in their particular circumstance, there's no chance for that because of the way of, you know, their internal controls. But what we're doing here is establishing a general rule with regard to all registered feedlots. And
so does this result does your argument mean that these cattle should be inspected twice?
Your Honor, and the way that this works, and I'll try to say this succinctly, is that for a normal feedlot, cattle may come in without an inspection, can be fed to a desired weight, and then they must be inspected before they go to slaughter. That's sort of that.
You're saying a normal feedlot, is that a registered feedlot?
And I'm sorry, Your Honor, a non-registered feedlot, yes. So that last point of verification comes at slaughter. For the registered feedlot, that last point of verification is moved kind of to the front end. So when they arrive at the registered feedlot, and then because of the permanent fencing that's verified by the committee, the bidding committee can have certainty that the ownership rate remains the same from there forward. So under 54.11.22, if those cattle come directly from the point of origin where they were verified and they go directly into that registered feedlot, then they can forego that inspection. They don't have to be double inspected because there was no opportunity for intermingling in the interim. If those cattle go anywhere else where the brand committee can't verify whether they may have been intermingled with other cattle or not, then those cattle must be inspected upon arrival to the registered feedlot because that becomes that last point of verification of ownership. They're then going to go to slaughter without another inspection. And the fear here is that the committee has no way to know in that instance whether or not the same cattle that were purchased are the cattle that were ultimately slaughtered. And as Mr. Husen testified at trial, Mr. Husen is the chief investigator for the committee, the brand committee's ability to resolve ownership disputes or have any recourse with regard to animals is severely limited once they're slaughtered, because those, I believe his quote was, they're gone at that point. So it's imperative that the ownership of those cattle be verified before that time. So with regard to 54.11.22 itself, it pretty clearly by its text requires these inspections. This is the only statute that answers the question of when cattle are required to be inspected at a registered feedlot.
Before you proceed a lot further, I think I understand your explanation in response to the chief's question, but if you boil that down to one word answer, is it yes or no?
With regard to the double inspection?
Yes.
The answer is no, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. So the two sentences of 54.11.22 have to be read together by their structure and language. The two sentences, the second refers back to the first. They don't break down into one relating to cattle from brand states and the other from not. The general rule that comes from these two provisions is that inspections are required for cattle that arrive at a registered feedlot unless they qualify for an exception. There are then two relatively narrow exceptions that you read out of this provision. The first is for cattle that come from states with brand inspection. Those can come directly from the point of origin with a brand clearance or a certificate of inspection, which are issued by the brand agency, and they don't have to be inspected if they come that through that path. The other exception then is for cattle that come from states without brand inspection, and they can be moved directly into the registered feedlot so long as they come directly from the point of origin.
Where do you get that second exception?
The second exception is found in the second sentence, Your Honor, and I will concede that it's phrased a little bit oddly, but the first sentence says clearly cattle from states with brand inspection may be moved directly in with the two forms of paperwork. The second sentence then says if they do not have such a brand clearance or brand inspection or satisfactory evidence of ownership from states or portions of states without brand inspection, then they must be inspected. So,
but there's no directly there, right?
That's right, Your Honor, but that kind of goes back to my point that these are not sentences that can be read in isolation. They have to be read together. And the only type of movement referred to in that provision is direct movement.
Force cattle originating from states with a brand inspection agency.
That's right, but I think the point holds that if the statute says they must be moved directly, it can't also be read to allow for indirect movement, and particularly because the second sentence doesn't just relate to cattle from states without brand inspection. It also refers back to the first sentence and the types of paperwork that can only come from a state with brand inspection.
You said the statute's clear. Would you concede if there's the potential for a clearer statute?
I would concede that there, as much time as I've spent with this provision, there are other ways I could imagine having drafted it, yes. But I do think, given the way that this must be read, kind of to make both provisions consistent, to give effect to that direct movement requirement, and also to read it harmonious with the Brand Act as a whole, I do think that the meaning is clear in that regard.
You're not conceding ambiguity.
No, Your Honor. I think there's only one way to read this that gives full effect to both provisions of 541122 and reads it harmonious with the act as a whole. So I do not believe it's ambiguous.
The district court seemed to indicate that there was movement in the first paragraph, first sentence, and not movement in the second sentence. Is that accurate?
It is accurate, Your Honor, in the sense that the second sentence is entirely silent on movement. But again, going back to my point that they have to be read together, there's only one type of movement here. And I think if you take the example of cattle from states with a brand inspection agency, clearly covered by both sentences. The first sentence says they may be moved directly into the registered feedlot without an exception. I've already told you why that direct movement makes sense with regard to the Brand Act as a whole. If we then read the second sentence to also say, but if you'd like to, you can move them indirectly. And there's really no teeth to the direct movement requirement in the first sentence. It's entirely without effect in that instance.
What impact does the 12 or 13 years of course of dealing have to do with the decision by the brand committee in 2021?
I don't think it has any, Your Honor. That vote simply rescinded any prior interpretation that would have conflicted with the face of 541122. The 13-year history, I think, isn't worth much in light of the fact that during that time frame, every other registered feedlot was administered differently. With that, we would ask you to reverse the decision of the district court and find that Nebraska Revised Statute 541122 requires cattle arriving at a registered feedlot to be inspected upon arrival if they do not come directly from origin. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Scaglione, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Greg Scaglione from Coley Justin appearing on behalf of the Appalee Adams Land and Cattle. Present with me in open court is Jerry Adams, Abram Babcock, and Amy Staples, who are representatives of the Appalee. I'd like to address the first question that was raised and what happened in 2009. Was this a special deal for Adams Land and Cattle? Exhibit 10 answers the question unambiguously. Exhibit 10 has both the motion and then a public advertisement. The motion talks generally about feedlots, plural, registered feedlots who have this documentation. Registered feedlots can do this, that, and the other. So the motion does not deal specifically with Adams Land and Cattle. It deals with an interpretation of the statute. As a result of that motion, the committee issued a public program announcement. It's entitled Registered Feedlots, plural, an alternative brand inspection program. That's what they issued in 2009. It was not particular to Adams Land and Cattle. In that announcement,
that promulgated under the Administrative Procedure Act?
It was not, and I don't think it needed to be, because it was not a rule. It was the interpretation. It was the announced interpretation of the statute.
Do we have evidence that it was promulgated at all?
We have evidence that it was passed by the committee. It was adopted by the committee by motion.
So how would other feedlots have known about it? Do we know?
The minutes are public record, number one, and it was on an agenda for a public meeting. This registered feedlots alternative brand inspection program is part of the records that go with permit applications and permit renewals. So every feedlot owner who applies to be a registered feedlot would see this alternative brand inspection program, which specifically says you can forego physical animal inspections. So my point is, this was not a unique deal for Adams Land and Cattle. The record shows that. And the executive director testified to it.
What is our record here, or the record that we have to deal with here?
Yes.
Show us about how many other registered feedlot owners are there in Nebraska? What's the scope of this possibility?
Well, not all of the state of Nebraska is a brand area. And there's an exhibit that shows the geographical region that is a brand area. So we start with, there's a number of feedlots that are not even subject to registration or inspections. For those in the brand area, the state never produced any evidence on the number. They did have vague references that no other registered feedlot has received this exemption. And my cross-examination showed no one else had applied for it. So you have to apply for it. You have to ask for it. You have to assert the exemption. Otherwise, if you voluntarily submit your cattle to a physical animal inspection and you pay the registration fee, you do that on your own accord.
Why can't the committee just change the program? I mean, what precludes them from doing so?
I think their declaration of the program is a declaration of the statute, and particularly the second sentence of the statute, which simply, I think the statute, as confirmed by the Attorney General opinion letter, as well as the minutes in this program, give two exemptions. There's one exemption from physical animal inspections, and there's an exemption from the fees associated with those inspections. That all comes from the second sentence of the statute, which says that if animals, it says it first in the negative, animals arriving without one of three documents are subject to inspection and fees. So to flip that to the positive, animals arriving with one of those documents are not subject to inspection and fees. The Attorney General's opinion letter says that a registered feedlot, the benefit both to the feedlot owner and to the committee, is you don't have to do physical animal inspections, you do record inspections. And then the benefit to the feedlot owner is to avoid the inspection fees. It's not that they're fee less, because when they register to be a registered feedlot, they pay an annual fee based on the number of head of cattle average on their lot for that year. So the fee, in a sense, is paid up front for a records inspection, not a physical animal inspection. So all of it derives from the second sentence.
Going back, let's, for the sake of argument, say that they made a mistake in their interpretation. Are they precluded from correcting that mistake at some point in the future?
I think in this case, when they brought the first cancellation in 2018, they sent the letter and said, the agreement's void, we're not going to honor it, we're going to start physical animal inspections. Adams Land and Cattle sued at that point. They then withdrew that threat. We dismissed the action for one reason. And this is I've cited it in the record. Mr. Whittleson went to our legislature to ask the legislature in 2018 to reverse by statute and to make clear that these inspections are required. And he testified that the legislature declined to do so. So with that,
do we know why they declined to do so?
No, we do not have the reason.
So maybe they think the statute was clear, and maybe they don't feel a need to change it.
Well,
we don't know. Is that correct?
I would say that what is known is that an interpretation, a stated practice was communicated to the legislature that there is a registered feedlot who is avoiding inspection. We need a change to the statute to address this. And there's been a lawsuit filed and withdrawn. We want clarification. And in that context, I think the legislative decision to pass is most reasonably interpreted as the current statute with the current course of dealing, which was presented to them, is acceptable. Had they not liked the current course of dealing, the reason given by Mr. Whittleson for the reason for why we need this change, had they not liked the course of dealing, they could have made the statute more clear and said, regardless of movement, there has to be an animal inspection. And they didn't do that. So I think the most reasonable interpretation of the declining aspect of the refraining of the legislature was they did not have an issue with the course of dealing. The last thing I'd like to say is
how often do we draw conclusions from what the legislature didn't do?
I agree. We would rather have express words and conduct. It gives us the most clear indication of intent. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, isn't, if we've been paying attention to our legislature in the last week, I mean, can't we see that sometimes legislatures don't pass laws for all kinds of reasons?
Correct. I would say,
don't we need some hesitation about drawing conclusions from inaction?
Well, there is some legal support for it. But I would agree in most cases, that's a risky proposition to speculate as to what their intention. But on this record, there was a lawsuit filed. There was a declaration that the course of dealing and the agreement are terminated. That then was put on hold. We know, we don't have to guess, that Mr. Whittleson went to the legislature and asked, as the executive director of a state agency, we have bad course of dealing, we have a bad agreement that we want to void. Would you help us by changing the statute? And they declined. In that context, I think their refrain from action does have meaning. And it, to me, it reinforces the state, the highest agency executive, that course of dealing is even given greater weight.
Should a court give any deference whatsoever to an agency interpretation that is in conflict with the plain meaning of a statute?
No. And in that your, case, the
your statute, argument, of course, will be the premise here would have no application. I understand it.
Correct.
But as far as giving deference to an agency, you would agree the statute says one thing, the agency cannot do something.
They cannot do anything inconsistent.
Right.
But what I think where we can be aided by the course of dealing and declarations of an agency, which I would say were subject to a public meeting and a public vote, and then issued a public announcement to all registered feedlot owners that this program is available. When it's that open and obvious, the question is that interpretation inconsistent with the statute, or does it take a two-sentence statute, which in no way could address all the permutations of the movement of cattle or the future evidences of ownership, and they delegate to the agency develop a course of dealing that's consistent with the statute and the spirit of the stat and the act, which is prevent cattle theft and brand theft. If those things are met, we should give weight to the course of dealing. And I don't think it's inconsistent with the second sentence. The committee and executive director for 13 years as of the date of trial did not view it was inconsistent.
And if the present brand commission concludes the previous brand commission was wrong, what remedy is there?
I think the issue I have with the revocation is two things. One, you have a 13-year course of dealing. You have a published program called the Alternative Program for Cattle Inspection that was never revoked. This all came up because I took the deposition of Mr. Whittleson and every prior one of his key inspectors. They all admitted, and there's a request for admissions, there was no motion, there was no public meeting, there's no resolution ever voiding the agreement or changing the interpretation. And then after discovery closed, not wanting to go to trial with that hanging over them, they took a vote in December, and then it was documented and approved about a month before the trial. I don't think that can undo 13 years of precedent, particularly when the legislature passed on revoking that action. So compare 30 days of course of dealing to 13, also subject to an agreement. I don't think that that should be allowed to revoke that course of dealing. I think at that point, when you have over a decade of course of dealing, the remedy is to go to the legislature, which they did and failed.
How does your reading give effect to the word directly in the first sentence of 54.1.1.2.2?
I think it's an oddly crafted statute because despite what they said, the first sentence does not say anything about what you're exempt from. It just says you may move them into a registered feedlot. It doesn't say that when they get there, they don't have to be subject to inspection. I think that's the implication. The second sentence is really the meat of that statute. And it's basically saying, because what it does is it takes cattle coming from a brand inspection area, because only an inspection certificate and brand clearance can only be issued by a brand agency. So those two imply those cattle would come from a brand area. And then evidence of satisfactory evidence of ownership, that would come both from within or without a brand area. But the point is, the documentation must prove the ownership and it must accompany the cattle. And that can be done with a records inspection, which a registered feedlot pays for that benefit, so that when the cattle's there and the records are there, they can be inspected. and then that frees them from the fee, which they've already paid up front.
So your argument is we don't have to worry about directly at all because the second sentence is where all the action is?
I think directly is subsumed in two, but the cattle is different in the second sentence because the cattle in the second sentence, which every witness agreed to, can be cattle from a non-brand area. The cattle in the first sentence can only be cattle from a brand area. That's why they all conceded that the cattle and the requirements in sentence two is different than one.
Let me ask you before you speak around about these background lots. What do they have to do with this? Were they the reason for the exemption process to begin with?
Yeah, so in the addendum that was signed, in this main paragraph in the upper third of the case, if it's coming from a backgrounder, there's three requirements that are contractually added to make sure they're not segregated or commingled and that ownership papers stay with them at all times and that when they're transported, ownership can be verified. And I proved at trial, undisputedly, there's no evidence to controvert it, those requirements were met. And so the backgrounding section, because the first sentence deals with point of origin, the backgrounder is not the point of origin. They went from a sales lot to the backgrounder. So we can't use the first sentence. We have to go to the second sentence. So,
are the background lots operated by Adams or are they operated by third parties?
In this case, they are not operated by Adams. I suppose they could be, and they could be outside of a brand area. But, and then the rules under the statute apply when they come to that registered feedlot. Do they have the paperwork?
So in the backgrounding lots, they're intermingled with other cattle.
They are not intermingled. The evidence in this case shows that there's an electronic tag in their ear and they are kept segregated while on the lot. And they can only get on the Adams Landing cattle truck when that ear tag monitors that this is an Adams Landing cattle head of cattle. If the ear tag is missing, they don't get on the truck. So only the cattle that Adams Landing Cattle owns with paperwork gets on the truck to come to the registered feedlot. That's undisputed in the record.
Is the addendum separate and different from the statute, or is it a clarification of the statute?
To me, what the addendum says, since there's wanting proof that ownership is maintained and proof of ownership is maintained, what the addendum does is the committee at the time says, we want to know that at the backgrounder, these things are in place to ensure the cattle coming is only cattle owned by Adams Land and Cattle. So again, I think it is a reasonable application of ensuring ownership. And they said, here's what we would like to see. And we delivered. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
Well, we asked Mr. Scaglione a number of questions. We'll give you 2 minutes, Mr. Deflipson, if you want to have some time for rebuttal.
I appreciate it. There are a few things I would like to respond to there. The first is with regard to this document that was held out as an advertisement. There are three versions of this in the record, Exhibit 11, Exhibit 10, page 45, and Exhibit 82. And the evidence shows that that does not describe the Adams arrangement. That was meant as a general description of the registered feedlot program as a whole. That was confirmed by the testimony of Mr. Stonick at page 116, lines 6 through 10 of your Bill of Exceptions, that did not describe the Adams arrangement. Further, one of the versions has on it Rev 1107, which he testified meant it was last revised in 2007, which was 2 years prior to the Adams arrangement. So that should not be taken as the committee holding this out as a general policy that was allowed for anyone. Rather, none of the committee forms changed. Nothing else changed about how the registered feedlot program was administered, except for how Adams themselves were administered. With regard to the background lots, I would like to emphasize that it's not a question of whether the cattle were actually intermingled there, but there's the potential for intermingling. These background lots are places where the brand committee does not administer them the same way.
How do you respond to Mr. Scaglione's suggestion that the cattle all have something in their ears? They can't get on the bus unless they have that.
Yes, Your Honor. they put on a significant amount of evidence with regard to kind of their internal controls. And the two things I would say are, one, none of that is regulated or checked by the brand committee. They don't have access to the internal controls with regard to that. So from a regulatory standpoint, that doesn't answer questions for them. And the second point is, this rule has to be applied to every registered feedlot. Adams has held themselves out in this litigation as being the largest and state of the art. And that may very well be true, but all the more reason why this rule has to apply to everyone. The brand committee does not know and does not audit, does not check for permanent fencing, doesn't understand the internal controls of these background lots, and therefore the rule can't simply be crafted for Adams alone.
Is the rule reflected at all in the regulations that have been adopted by the brand committee?
And I'm sorry, the rule with regard to the Adams arrangement?
Yes.
No, Your Honor.
Could it be?
Because it would be contravened by 541122 or the committee's understanding of that, no, I don't believe it could be. To the extent that would ever have been a valid agency construction, I believe it absolutely should have been. That way the other registered feedlots would have been on notice of it. It would have been part of the program. It would have been offered to everyone at that point.
But you can't read the regulations and even get a whiff of some sort of arrangement like this.
Your Honor, the testimony at trial from Mr. Stonick was that, and I can give you the page 118 and 119 of the Bill of Exceptions, is that it existed in the minutes of the September 2009 meeting, December 2009 meeting, and in the one-page addendum to Adams's registered feedlot agreement. And that's the only place you could find this.
Does the Attorney General opinion for 2016 have any bearing on this case?
It does not, Your Honor. The topic of that AG opinion was totally distinct. If you track the paragraphs on, I believe, the second page that are pointed to by the appellee, those track with 541120 and 541121, which are the other two provisions with regard to the registered feedlot permit. That's when cattle need to be inspected when they leave a registered feedlot and how they're administered when they're at the registered feedlot with regard to audits and qualifying for the program. So the statement about not being subject to an inspection is when they leave the registered feedlot, they don't have to be inspected before slaughter. It doesn't say anything at all about arriving at the registered feedlot. And with that, I would ask you to reverse the opinion of the district court. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, counsel. That concludes arguments in Adams Land and Cattle, LLC versus Widowson. Counsel, you are excused. And the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is Ryan versus State of Nebraska.